Welcome to your personal deep dive.
Oh, I like that deep dive.
We're diving into kind of a pivotal moment in church history.
Okay.
Specifically, the emergence of what's known as liberal theology.
All right.
And for this deep dive, we've got a great resource, I think.
Yeah.
From Dr. Roger Green.
Absolutely.
His lecture on the rise of liberalism.
Yeah. This is from his Reformation to the Present Church History series.
That's right.
It's really insightful.
Yeah. And our mission is, I think, to unpack the key factors and figures that led to this really significant shift. I mean, this is a major turning point in the way Christian thought developed after the Reformation.
Absolutely a major turning point. It's kind of understanding a whole different trajectory.
Yeah, so to really grasp this, I think we need to first understand the context, right?
Context is everything.
The state of the church before all this happened.
Yeah, where were things at?
And you know, the lecture kind of reminds us that the immediate period before this was a time of just some serious criticism of the church and Christianity in general.
Yeah, there was a lot of scrutiny, questioning, really putting Christianity under the microscope.
And then following that came what Dr. Green calls...
It's almost an attack.
Yeah, an evangelical resurgence.
Yeah, and I think this is an important point to remember is that liberal theology isn't just something that popped up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's very much a response to both.
Yes.
This criticism of Christianity as well as this response in the form of evangelical resurgence.
Absolutely.
It's navigating a really complex kind of intellectual and spiritual landscape.
To really get a handle on this, we need to look at, I think, specifically the environment, right?
Right.
Where this all took root.
Yeah, we need to go to a specific time and place.
Yeah.
And that's 17th and 18th century Germany.
And Dr. Green highlights three characteristics, I guess, of German life during this period.
Yeah. And these are important because they're going to carry into the 19th century and really shape the environment.
Okay, so let's unpack these a little bit.
All right, sounds good.
Lutheran scholasticism.
Okay.
That sounds very academic.
It does sound very academic, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What this refers to, though, is doctrine that was known intellectually, but lacked, you know, practical application or vibrant teaching. It was, in the words of Dr. Green, doctrine void of life.
So you could be able to articulate.
You know
all the concepts,
right,
but not really be living it.
Yeah. Imagine knowing all the rules of a game by heart.
Yeah.
But never actually playing the game.
Yeah.
With any kind of enthusiasm.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So that's Lutheran scholasticism. And the second one is non-religious rationalism.
Okay, so this was the movement that emphasized, right, human reason.
That's right, yeah, emphasizing the ability of individuals to think and understand things on their own.
And sometimes at the expense of religious, like traditional religious authority or...
Right, diminishing emphasis on the authority of the church.
Okay.
On doctrine, on the Bible itself, even on Jesus.
Yeah.
The focus shifts to human reason.
Yeah.
And it's in all domains, including religious understanding.
Interesting. Okay, so that was the second one. And then the third one.
All right. The third one is pietism.
And this has kind of a more positive connotation, I think.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely more positive.
Like?
This was a reaction against both scholasticism.
Okay.
As well as what they perceived as the kind of irrational elements in religion.
Yeah.
So it sought to revitalize faith by engaging both the mind and the heart.
So it was trying to bring it to life.
Trying to bring it to life, yeah.
Not just the head knowledge, but the heart.
Exactly.
Okay, so you've got these three kind of forces going on at the same time.
Yeah.
Right, this kind of intellectual but detached doctrine.
Yeah.
This emphasis on human reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then this pietism, which was trying to have more heart.
That's right, all converging.
All converging in 19th century Germany.
The children, yeah.
It sounds like a real melting pot.
Absolutely.
Of ideas. And within this environment emerged a pivotal figure, Friedrich Schleiermacher.
1768 to 1834, Friedrich Schleiermacher.
Yeah.
Dr. Green calls him the father of liberal theology.
Wow.
And emphasizes his originality by saying he's the most original theologian since John Calvin.
That's a huge statement.
Yeah, that's a big statement.
Really puts him in a whole different category.
It really does, yeah.
Now, to underscore his importance, the lecture mentions Karl Barth.
Of course.
Who was a major 20th century theologian.
Right. Massively influential.
And he considers Schleiermacher to be essential reading.
Alongside John Calvin.
Alongside John Calvin. Yeah. Anyone who wants to understand modern theology.
Exactly. He's basically saying that to grasp modern theology, you have to wrestle with Schleiermacher.
Wow. So without Schleiermacher, the whole thing could have gone in a different direction.
Yeah, potentially, yeah.
So now, what shaped his thinking? What were the key influences on Schleiermacher?
Well, Dr. Green points to three main influences.
Okay.
First, Schleiermacher was raised in German Pietism.
Okay.
So he understood that emphasis on the intellect and emotion in faith.
That makes sense, given Pietism.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, second,
mm-hmm.
he was influenced by German rationalism.
Okay.
He was a great student, a really sharp mind.
So he embraced kind of the intellectual side of things as well.
Yeah, very much engaged with the rationalist thought of his time.
So you've got this tension between the piety and the intellectualism.
Yeah, and then the third one is romanticism.
Okay, romanticism. Now, what's that all about?
Yeah, this was a big deal. Romanticism was a movement that valued emotion and feeling over pure rationality. Yeah. It emphasized intuition and personal experience.
So you have pietism, rationalism, and romanticism all kind of...
all coming together.
Converging in this one guy.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable.
And this all feeds into his most important work, right? His magnum opus, yeah.
Which is called...
On Religion.
Yeah.
Speeches to Its Culture Despisers.
Wow, that's a very...
A provocative title.
Provocative title.
Yeah.
So who are these culture despisers?
Well, these were the upper classes who were basically dismissive of Christianity and the church.
Okay.
Schleiermacher's book was a defense of religion aimed right at them.
So he's trying to make Christianity relevant to this particular group.
Exactly. He saw a need to reach this influential audience.
Now, the lecture makes a point here that I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
That just as... some are called to serve the poor.
Right.
Others are called to minister to the up and out, right?
Why up and out, yeah.
Like the wealthy.
The wealthy, the influential, those shaping culture.
Yeah, and he uses the example of Phil Smith.
Oh, interesting example.
Who's the principal trumpet.
Wow.
For the New York Philharmonic.
So someone in a very culturally significant position.
Yes, as someone who brings his faith to that sphere.
Yeah, I see the parallel there. So Schleiermacher saw a need to do this. And what were his core arguments in these speeches?
Well, one of his most important arguments was the emphasis on religious experience as the heart of religion.
Okay.
So it's not about dogma or doctrine.
Not about the head knowledge again.
Right. It's about a personal encounter with the divine.
So he's shifting things away from the intellect.
Yes, very much so.
And toward feeling, right.
He talked about Gefühl.
Gefühl, yeah, a crucial concept.
Which in German means what exactly?
Okay, so formally he defined Gefühl as the immediate apprehension of the infinite by the finite.
Okay.
Now, that sounds complicated.
That's a little
rough. But essentially, it's this immediate intuitive awareness of God.
So a direct connection with the divine.
Yes, a sense of absolute dependence on something beyond ourselves.
Without needing the church or scripture as intermediaries.
Right. That was revolutionary for its time.
Wow. So that leads into his argument about the importance of intuition.
Yes, intuition over pure intellectual knowledge. So the key word is experience.
Experience, not knowledge.
Experience over knowledge.
Yeah, it's about that inner feeling, that direct apprehension.
Okay, so after Schleiermacher lays all this groundwork, then what happens?
Well, this leads to what Dr. Green calls classical Protestant liberalism.
Okay, so this is really the next step in the evolution of this.
Exactly. It builds on Schleiermacher's ideas.
And what are the defining characteristics of this movement?
Okay, Dr. Green outlines several.
Okay.
The first is that it was a reaction to religious conservatism.
Okay, so it's still pushing back against the status quo.
Right. It's challenging tradition, church authority, literal interpretations of the Bible.
So they're not just accepting things at face value.
No, they're questioning, they're probing.
Okay, what's the second characteristic?
Second, they wanted to restate Christian faith.
What do you mean restate it?
They wanted to reinterpret it.
Okay.
To make it understandable to modern people.
So make it relevant.
Yeah, relevant to the 19th and 20th centuries. Make it intellectually credible.
So they felt like it had to make sense to people.
It had to resonate with the times.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
What about the third characteristic?
Third, they emphasize the authority of reason.
Okay, so that connects back to the rationalism we talked about.
Absolutely. It's about using your own mind.
To figure things out for yourself.
Not blindly following authority.
Right. Think for yourself.
Exactly.
What's the next one?
Okay, this one's interesting.
Okay.
They believed in the acceptance of all truth as God's truth.
all truth as God's truth. So that's a very inclusive view.
Yeah, very inclusive.
That sounds like.
So this led them to be open to things like Darwin's theory of evolution.
Oh, wow.
And historical critical methods of studying the Bible.
Really?
Yeah. They didn't see a conflict between science, history, and faith.
So they felt like it all fit together somehow.
Yeah. They believed all truth ultimately comes from God.
Wow.
And in fact, many of them were actually the shapers of what we call biblical criticism today.
That's fascinating.
It is.
That they would be so open to these new ideas.
Yeah, it was a real shift in thinking.
Now, the fifth and final characteristic Dr. Green mentions is this idea of liberalism's influence in two directions.
Yeah, this is where things get really interesting.
Yeah, in what ways?
So on the one hand, it influenced the more conservative wing of the church.
What? Really?
Yeah, the fundamentalists, the evangelicals.
How's that possible?
Well, it was through its emphasis on personal religious experience.
Okay.
And the direct connection with God.
Without all the intermediaries.
Right. No need for priests or elaborate rituals.
So even though they disagreed on a lot of things.
Yeah, they had different doctrines.
This idea of personal experience resonated.
It did, yeah.
That's amazing.
It is. And then on the other hand, liberalism also influenced the left wing of Christianity.
Okay, so it went in both directions.
It did.
And specifically, how did it influence the left wing?
Through the social gospel movement.
Okay.
Which is associated with Walter Rauschenbusch.
Okay, now who was he?
He's often called the father of the social gospel movement.
And what was the social gospel all about?
It emphasized the social implications of faith.
Okay.
Those things like caring for the poor, fighting injustice, working for social change.
So it was about putting your faith into action.
Exactly. It's about the kingdom of God being realized here on earth.
So not just about individual salvation.
Right. It's about making a difference in the world.
And this was influenced by liberalism.
It was, yeah.
Now, Dr. Green makes an interesting point here.
Okay.
That Rauschenbusch, even though he was all about social action,
yeah,
he was considered an evangelical by his biographer.
That's right. So the lines between these movements.
They were blurry.
Yeah, they weren't always so clear-cut.
So liberalism, in a way, helped shape both the individualistic and the social expressions of Christianity.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing how it influenced both sides.
Wow. So I think, as we've explored,
yeah,
your sources paint a picture of a really dynamic period.
Absolutely.
Where you had tradition butting up against these new intellectual trends.
New ways of thinking.
And it gave rise to this whole new thing, liberal theology.
Yeah, with far-reaching consequences.
So what stands out to you from this deep dive?
I think what's really striking is how Schleiermacher emphasized personal experience over dogma.
Yeah.
And how that influenced both conservatives and liberals.
Yeah. It's amazing how that one idea had such a wide impact.
It really is.
And I think it raises the question for us today.
Mm-hmm.
How do we balance intellectual understanding with personal faith?
That's an ongoing tension.
Yeah. And I think the other big takeaway is this idea that movements that seem opposed can actually share unexpected origins or influence each other.
Exactly. Like liberalism influencing both the right and the left.
It's all connected.
It really is. It's a web of interconnected ideas.
So this deep dive into liberalism
really
gives us a framework.
A lens.
For understanding how religious thought evolves.
Absolutely.
And how it engages with culture.
Always evolving, always engaging.
And I think it makes us ask some really big questions.
Yeah, like, what is faith?
What is faith? What's the role of reason?
And how do we understand the divine?
Both personally.
And collectively.
And how do we live that out?
Big questions.
Big questions.
But important ones.
Yeah.
Worth pondering.
Absolutely.